You're listening to the CCB Health and Fitness Show on the Canadian Council of the Blind podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Vanprate. Let's get going. All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 14. Yeah, it's episode 14. I accidentally had two episode 12s. And for those superstitious folks out there, we'll skip episode 13. So there's a 12 and a 12B, and we'll just skip right over to episode 14. My bad. Sorry. But this should be one of the better episodes for a lot of reasons. One is it's our very first interview, and two, it's an interview with my wife. So reason being is as we move along within the podcast, you know, I'm telling you a lot of my personal stories just to give you some reference, and I'm waiting to hear back from you guys because I really want to include a lot of your information too. But another really key piece of the puzzle is really understanding the other end of the tether and the other end of that arm, that helping hand. You know, I'm a big believer that blind and visually impaired can and should do tons of amazing things for themselves, but let's be realistic, right? Even the most independent blind person still requires help now and again. And, you know, everything from general navigation to getting around, you know, a restaurant or whatnot, or in a health and fitness aspect, how do we participate in the sports that we love and the activities that we love? And we often need those extra set of eyes, that helping hand, somebody on the other end of the tether to guide us around. So this first episode, this first interview, I should say, comes from my very first sighted guide in an athletic point of view. I mean, as I grew up, I grabbed the occasional elbow, etc., but there was never any formal, consistent sighted guiding needed. But back in about 2008-09, as my vision really started to take a turn, in order to continue to do the things that I love and the sports that I loved, I really had to start learning how to work as a team with a sighted guide, and all the awesome intricacies that come with that. So this is episode one of the guide interviews, and I'm going to bring you interviews with a lot of my sighted guides. But if you have a sighted guide, a trusted buddy, somebody that you really rely on, and you've had a really cool teamwork being built, let me know. I mean, I'd love to figure out how to get you guys on this podcast and really share your stories and your perspectives. But until then, I guess I'll keep sharing with you my guides and my stories, just to give some perspective. So sit back, relax. For once, you're not going to have to hear me talk too much. And I really hope you find some value in this and enjoy. So yeah, without further ado, my first athletic sighted guide, my wife of almost 12 years, and a really cool lady, Miss Mindy Bowles. All right, and welcome to our very first interview on the CCB Health and Fitness podcast. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to be discussing with all of our sighted guides, basically how they got involved with sighted guiding, their experiences, things they would mention to other individuals who are thinking about becoming sighted guides, because it's a very important piece of the puzzle, that other end of the tether, that person on the other end of the arm that's helping us through our daily sporting activities, those extra pair of eyes. So I'm super pumped for the very first guest who I mentioned in the intro, as a brief disclaimer, is also my wife, Mindy. So Mindy, super happy that you're on the show. Thank you for being the very first interviewee.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you are a podcast connoisseur, so I'm going to try to have my A game here, but you're also a bit of a beta tester, and as the interview processes go on, I'm sure they'll be a lot smoother, but we'll get rolling. So, you know, as we mentioned, you are my wife, but I guess before you met me, can you maybe describe any sort of exposure or any sort of experience you've had with persons who are blind or visually impaired, or am I sort of the first person that you had met?
When I was in elementary school, there were two people who were a part of my elementary school. Margaret and Eric. They were brother and sister, and they were both visually impaired, and they were integrated into our... I was never in either one of their classes, but they were integrated into the mainstream classes at our school, and I interacted with them as much as you would with someone who's not in your class. And I traveled for a year with a group called Up With People, and one of our castmates on that trip, his name was Harice, and he was a totally blind individual.
Cool. And, you know, going back to the grade school aspect, so you're... Well, I won't tell your age, but you're a little younger than me, but not by much. But anyways, we're in our 30s. So elementary school was a little while ago. And I know, you know, when I first was diagnosed as legally blind, I was 5 years old or so. And the way grade school is handled, I guess, persons with disabilities, probably a little bit different than it is now. You know, were the two individuals in your grade school incorporated in mainstream, or were, you know, did you get a lot of chance to interact with them?
From what I remember, we did have a class in our school that was a separate group of individuals, I believe, who had learning challenges. But Margaret and Eric were in amongst the quote unquote normal kids.
Okay, and so we look at Margaret and Eric, and you know, you interact with them as any grade schooler would, mm-hmm. and then you went up with people, and you interacted with Harice. Now, moving into that sort of guiding atmosphere, was there any time during the Up With People period, because you were an adult at that point, that you had experience in sighted guiding, or was that still new to you until you met me?
Everyone in the cast sort of participated in helping to get Harice where we were all going, or giving instructions, or helping to direct. Because obviously, we didn't have a brailler and be able to braille the paper that we were all given as instructions. Harice was getting basically verbal instructions, and as a team, like the entire cast would have to work as a team to help him to find lunch or find the dressing rooms or find in some cases the stage, potentially also help, sorry, Up With People is a performing organization. So not only were we eating together and living together and traveling together, we were also performing together. So part of that would be getting on and off the stage in some situations. And I think people took larger roles than others, but definitely, I wouldn't say I took a large role, but I definitely chipped in from time to time.
What did you learn? Like, what did you learn to help with?
Basically, it was whatever Harice asked. He was a pretty independent individual, and so if he was standing off to the side and you would wander by and say, "Hey, Harice, we're all headed to lunch. Are you going that way?" And he would be like, "Yeah, can I tag along?" And then you'd hand him an arm and have him come along, kind of thing.
And did anybody teach you that protocol, or that was just him basically telling you what he needed, or how did that go?
The way the Up With People worked is you were exposed to a whole lot of different people all the time. So we were constantly having sort of training as you go. So we would talk about like what sort of protocols are in this country that we're visiting. We had discussions about what it's like to be homosexual in different cultures. So having Harice present what is it like to be a blind person and Up With People was something that was part of the culture of the group. So him discussing what he needed or didn't need was a perfectly normal part of that experience.
Okay, so then we fast forward to you and I, and we won't get into the love story. And you know,
so romantic.
Why are you laughing so hard? So because it's a health and fitness show, you know, let's sort of fast forward to you and I, we dated and we got married, and we've been married a long time, which is great. And I'm trying to remember, and maybe you can remember, because it might be more impactful than it was for me. You know, I've spent a lot of time, you know, getting help from people in the sighted community. But you were sort of with me as my journey from sighted athlete to guided athlete took place. So we would have been married probably 3 or 4 years by the time that happened. So, you know, can you recall when your first, you know, episode of helping me in an athletic or a health and fitness aspect would be. I don't know. I'm trying to think of that too, but I don't know if I can think of
on one of our first dates, I know that we went cycling together on individual bicycles, and I remember having discussions about what you can and can't see and that kind of thing. But at that point, you were really independent and probably could have done it all alone. I wasn't really guiding you in that situation. The one that sticks out for me is when we first brought home a tandem bicycle.
Ah, yes. And I mean, a bit of a backstory too. You knew me since we were in high school, since we were like 13. So you knew I was the guy who just didn't see very well. And it wasn't something of shocker to you.
It wasn't shock to me, but I don't know if everyone we went to high school with knew that you didn't see that well.
No. And, you know, and fast forward to when we started dating, I saw a little bit worse, but you still knew, I think what shocks people, you know, you knew what you're getting into.
Well, I understood, my brain understood what I was getting in. Like, yes, I didn't know the ins and outs of how it was going to go down, but I wasn't going into it blind.
Yeah. Well, and that's the cool thing, right? I mean, I know we're sort of taking a tangent there, but it's a really important thing I look for in my guides. And, you know, because guides oftentimes become really good friends, and you obviously being my wife and whatnot. But one of the things I look at is that they don't see me as somebody different, right? They look at it as, you know, I call it the ultimate three-legged race. And I always found that with you, you know, it was just another problem that had to be solved. It wasn't a problem that you had to fix. It was a problem that we had to solve as a team. And I guess we then fast forward to the perfect example of that is when we brought our first tandem bike home, probably about 3 years into marriage. So do you want to tell a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah, well, elaborate. They're here to listen to you, not me, so go for it.
Where did we get the bicycle?
Yeah, so that's another long story, too.
We went on a drive to get a bicycle.
Well, the very first bicycle, we called him Big Al. He was right now, you see a shed outside, I have six tandems. But at that point, back in 2009, I had one tandem. I went from a sighted triathlete to a paratriathlete, so I got one tandem. And it was a very fancy-schmancy racing tandem. And I guess one thing to note, I'm about 6 feet tall, maybe a little shy of that, and I sit in the back. Mindy's about 5'4", and she sits in the front, so they don't usually make tandems like that. So it was a bit of an awkward fit to begin with. But Big Al was that first tandem.
But that's very germane to the point of the story, because basically Ryan is a triathlete. He is a very active individual. I'm not active, but that is not the focus of my life. I enjoy getting exercise. I also like to eat the things that I like to eat, and I exercise so that my pants continue to fit, as I like to say.
Yep.
So Ryan purchased a very fancy racing bike, and I don't know if the listeners have experience with the difference between a mountain bike or a very comfortable cruiser bike versus a twitchy, touchy racing bike. And then on top of that, throw on somebody who weighs about the same as you, who is going to be sort of weight in the back. And that, I'm not trying to say you were dead weight. I'm just trying to say that the dynamics of the bicycle is different alone than it is with two people.
Oh, for sure. I mean, a tandem, for those that have ridden one, you know, they're chuckling because they totally understand, you know, it's the different types of bikes are, you know, a cruiser bike is kind of like your minivan. It's comfortable. It's easy to navigate. It's dependable, etc. Where a racing tandem is like your Ferrari, right? Or it's like a racehorse. It's temperamental, and it's a harder bike to ride just in general as an individual, but then you put two people on and yeah.
And then get to the point of where you have this 5'4" little person in the front who's not really good at riding racing tandems, and then a bike that's a little bit too big for them, and then put somebody on the back who's really excited and really wants this to work and really wants it to go well, and his poor wife who is kind of incapable of driving it.
But that was going to be the next point, right? Is that, you know, again, it all sort of flies in the face of convention, right? Convention And that's what we try to break down here in the program. Convention says, oh, poor blind person, you know, I'm going to be the guide. I'm going to be the experienced one that's going to bring you along for the ride and get you outside into the sunshine. And this dynamic was completely reversed. I was, you know, the experienced triathlete, you know, the experienced cyclist, and bikes and stuff.
But not only that, but a lot of tandem things that are written about tandems are gendered differently because the wifey sits in the back. Oh, yeah. And the wifey, if she gets tired, she doesn't have to pedal and whatever. And not to say that there aren't serious couples out there who take their cycling seriously, but I would say most of the literature is toned that the wife is the passenger.
Basically. Oh yes. I invite everybody to Google that. When I was researching tandems, it was always about, you know, the wife in the back. And if you want to shut your wife up, put her in the back. And you're like, oh my God, like how like incredibly sexist and just beyond the point. And so, yeah, anyways, I mean, it was, I guess the point is that we had to learn it, but we were learning it from a completely backwards perspective from what society thought was going to happen. And, you know, and I'm sure it was quite the sight for all the neighbors and even everybody who saw us individually, right? I'm in my racing, you know, bike shirts and fancy stuff and you're in your t-shirt and sitting up like, if you ever seen the lady from The Wizard of Oz, the who rides the bike with the basket in the front, you know, very upright, you know, like that's what you look like when you ride a bike because you're very happy and very, you know, relaxed. And I'm, you know, I'm intense, right? Like I want to ride my bike. So it's we're coming at it from a very backwards dynamic, which was really, really cool. So getting into that first, because that probably was our very first guiding teamwork atmosphere. And we're still married years later, so it obviously went well. But what do you recall from that day?
I would say that what I recall is almost falling off and then asking you to stop and never do it again. But, and I think that was really hard because at that point I really wanted to give you all the things that you were losing. And this is one of the things that I tried that was outside of my comfort zone. And even though I tried, I, because of my size and the bike size, I couldn't be good at it. Like it would have taken me years to figure out how to learn to ride a race bike well enough to be able to handle it so that you could ride with me, basically.
And what did you find was the most difficult? Like, you know, I can remember that day, but I'm not gonna put words in your mouth. Like I thought I was pretty patient because I understood this was my future now. Like this is what I was going to be doing was riding tandems, and you know, you were my first willing pilot, so.
Oh, I remember us arguing about it and being unhappy about it, but I know that from future bicycle rides that probably what happened is that you would want to be in control of the situation, and me being the driver, I had to drive and direct the bicycle. So there's also challenges between our riding styles, so you potentially take the corners a lot more sharply than I do, or making decisions about whether we're stopping or like at an intersection or whether we're going to glide through an intersection and those kinds of things. And it works a lot better now that you see less. Is that bad?
No, I was just going to say, I think part of it too is I had just literally 7 months before I had got off my regular bike for the last time. So, I mean, I still in my brain, I probably could have ridden a bike by myself. So I still had that enough vision to probably fake it, but I'd made the decision not to. So yeah. And partially too, when I'm riding with you, I can see over top of you. So it's kind of like I'm riding a bike anyways. And so, yeah, I mean, and now I see far less and I've been riding tandems for 10 years roughly. So it's more ingrained in me and I've ridden with lots of different tandem riders. But I guess the moral of that story is it was pretty shaky. You know, we got through it and now we ride a handful of times a year, but we have our sort of dedicated bike and we've made compromises now where we know what our systems are generally. And I have the gears in the back. So at least I get that control and you're happy with that.
Yeah, that totally makes me happy because then all I do is just ride basically and don't pay attention to the exercise component of it. To me, it's just, we're going here. I turn here. I pedal hard or not, you get to pedal as hard as you want. And then we get where we need to go.
Well, yeah. And it was all, it's all a learning curve. So, It's a phrase I use a lot, which is beta testing, right? Like it's somebody's got to be the first to sort of help me learn these things. And you certainly were the first in terms of guiding. And one of our next episodes, the next in line in terms of guiding was Sid. And he, in the high performance side of it, I guess he was the beta tester, but we'll have to ask him. But I mean, since then, you've guided me in a lot of different other things.
Sure.
Any elaborations on that?
Like, I think when we first started, you were a lot more nervous about our situation because it was newer to you. And now when I guide you, which isn't very frequently because you have people who are better matched to you than I am, but like if we go for a run now, it's a lot harder for me to get back into the mindset. Like I remember when we lived in Owen Sound and we used to run a fair bit, I was really comfortable being your guide, and I was faster then, so I could keep up to you better. But we had a system down, and like now because we don't do it as frequently, I find you have to communicate more, and it's a little bit more frustrating because it's not as seamless and smooth.
Yeah, and I mean, the bumps are, at least when it's not smooth, we learn to sort of, it doesn't last long.
I guess. Oh, no, but like that, and that has to do with the fact that we have been doing it for a long time, and I don't mean it's smooth as in somebody gets hurt or something bad happens. It's just slightly, it's not as easy. You have to think about it harder, that's all.
Yeah, and since then, I mean, we've done, oh, off the top of my head, well, we've done, I guess the one that really stands, I mean, we've run a bunch and we've done bike rides and stuff, and we've done a couple little group rides with bikes, and we experienced tandem riding on some hills, which is scary for you because we live in a completely flat land. So yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Where was that one?
That was up in the Corthus.
Yeah. As Minden, I think it was called. Yeah. So, yeah. That's when I kind of wish I had brakes in the back, but again, we're still alive to tell the tale, right?
And it's all land in the lake.
No, it's all a learning curve. So one of the I guess the biggest or last more epic guiding that you did was in 2015. Do you want to tell them what we did in Dublin?
No. Sure.
Yeah, in Dublin. Yeah.
We did a 10K. I don't know what else you want to say about that. It was pretty cool because we ended up running the race with one person who kept coming back at the same time, and we were running streets I didn't recognize or know, and it was sort of hilly, which is always a challenge, and it's in a foreign country, not that foreign, but
yeah, but that's precisely it, right? There's a difference in sort of dragging me around neighborhoods here versus, you know, a completely new situation with lots of people who are in race mode. you know, and I wasn't in race mode. I knew what we were doing, and it was just a fun event. But, you know, you obviously were trying your very best and wanted to get us there, you know, as fast as you could go. And but you still had your job to do as a guide. And I guess you saw for the first time what recognition the guide gets and the team gets in a competitive atmosphere when you're in around, you know, hundreds of people. And I think you enjoyed that.
Well, and I think, like now around here, people are used to seeing you, but when you go to a new place and people, you get lots of questions about like, why are you guys tied together? Like, you don't want to lose each other in a group, like, ha ha ha, that's funny. But it's like, no, this is actually like a good idea. Like, you don't want Ryan to just run off.
Yeah, well, you might want me to run off sometimes, but that's okay. So a couple last questions, I guess, is what are maybe some, you know, put you on the spot because you wanted to know the questions ahead of time. And I'm like, no, I like to be spontaneous here. So your overall impressions now in terms of guiding, like what would you say makes a good guide? And what would you say would make and knowing me and the guides I've had, we're not naming names because I've had a lot of guides. So what would you say is a good guide? What would you say makes for maybe not so good guiding?
I would say that good guides are very communicative. But I don't mean that they communicate everything. I mean that they communicate the things that your athlete would want to know. So I know that you are particularly sensitive to potholes and that you get really excited if you step in a pothole, because I think you've stepped in a lot of potholes and you have a tendency to hurt yourself when you step in potholes. So I know I'm very cognizant of watching the surface that we're running on to make sure that you stay out of the potholes. So I would assume that there are other runners who are more worried about other things. Like maybe they're worried about curbs. Like maybe curbs are a big obstacle or have some sort of blip in their mind that, oh, we're coming to a curb. Not a scary thing, but like something that bothers them or something. But I think the communication between God and athlete, that athlete needs to say, hey, like, I'm really worried about potholes. Like, here's what you can do to guide me around a pothole. Here's the words you can use in order to tell me there's a pothole coming. Or, because sometimes if you're racing, you may not be able to speak. If your athlete is in better shape than you, the guide is going to have trouble talking. Maybe that's not an ideal situation, but that could happen.
It happens. And I mean, you mentioned one thing there, which is kind of a good point to bring across, is the communication, you know, what the athlete needs, but there's also what the guide needs as well. And I guess one of the big things to get across is that, there can't be assumptions on either end. The athlete can't just assume that the guide is going to be a miracle worker and that nothing bad's going to happen. And the guide can't just assume that they are taking control and the athlete will just do whatever they want, right?
Well, but the other thing is true too, that like it's the athlete's race, but the guide needs to communicate like, hey, I can't breathe. We need to slow down, or vice versa in that case. But yeah, it's really a team. And I guess in the answer to your original question is that really the best guides are the guides who think of it as a team. Mm-hmm. And yet you as the athlete in a race might be the leader of that team. Like the blind person, the blind individual would be the leader of that team, but that you still are part of the team.
Any thoughts or answers on what would make or maybe what you've seen in not so good guiding? And I guess we kind of sort of answered it, but any takeoffs on that?
It's harder to constructive criticism, I guess. I think it's good to be casual about it, because I think people are more receptive when it's just an everyday thing going on, as opposed to, this is the most amazing thing, this is the most special occurrence ever, and all you shall bow down around me because this is the amazing Ryan Van Praat. And yeah, he's pretty cool, but like he just wants to be chill just like everybody else.
Yeah, and I've had that discussion a handful of times, right? And I mean, I guess it's personality of each athlete too, but...
A blind athlete in a race is a pretty cool thing. And from the race director's perspective, they want to pump you up too, right? But if your team just wants to participate like everybody else, then put that forward, right? Like as your team.
Yeah. And, you know, we being myself and whoever I'm training with or racing with, we get seen anyways, right? Like, you know.
You're conspicuous. Yeah.
We're conspicuous. I guess that's the word. Yes. Yeah. So anyways,
stand out.
My
Sorry,
vocabulary. Yeah. So, but we stand out anyways. Right. And I guess to your point is, yeah, we don't want the extra bells and whistles and bullhorns, and we don't, because to me that feeds a stereotype that I'm trying to avoid. What I'm trying to avoid is the fact that a blind person in a race is something outlandishly miraculous and everybody needs to part the seas, etc. Yeah. We're there, we're visible, people go, hey, that's kind of neat, but then they don't focus on it. They just see us as another competitor. And I think for me personally, having people who just blow the whistles and go, get out of the way, it's a blind guy coming through, I shake my head, because it's not, to me, that's not really furthering respect for us as individuals and athletes. It puts us more of like a sideshow, which is kind of frustrating, I guess, is one way to put it. So. All right, last question, and then you're free to go. Any advice for
anybody thinking of becoming a god, any pieces of information, any enlightenments, any revelations, any cliff notes?
I don't know if you've covered this in your podcast yet, because I'm not completely up to date with all of your podcasts. I apologize. But one of the things that I would suggest from the guide's perspective is to not feel obligated to, like, because if you feel obligated, you're not going to have a good time. And if you're not having a good time, you're not going to want to do it again. So you need to feel like that you're going out to, like, go for a run with a friend. You don't need to feel like you're going out to help someone, and like somebody who desperately needs and wants your attention. Yeah. Okay. Maybe they want to hang out with you, but like they want to hang out with you because you're a cool person and because you want to go for a run with them, and you should want to hang out with them on the same level. Like, that's why you're guiding, is because you find something in common, and that's what it comes down to, is if you find somebody who you get along with, who you can be a teammate with, then that works out to be a guide, right?
Yeah. Seek to, as a guide, as a potential guide and as a potential athlete, it goes that way too. Seek to create a friendship, not, you know, from a guide's perspective, don't seek to go out and do charity. And from an athlete's perspective, don't seek to get somebody just to give you charity. I would say seek on both parts to create friendships. And I mean, I have with pretty much every one of my guides. And that's why they stay guides, is because you like to hang around them. Especially if you're tied to them and you sweat all over each other, you probably have to like hanging around each other.
Yeah. So
you get that extra special privilege. So,
it's the best part.
I know. So, all right. Well, that's awesome. That's, you are the very first guide. You were kind of there when I went from sighted to para athlete, and you, through that whole transition, and you're learning along with me, and you've seen a lot of the guides I've raced and trained with, and it's been a fun journey. And I mean, I wouldn't trade it. I think it's a really cool life experience. So I thank you for your time and joining us, and I'm not going to edit any of this, so I hope you're happy with what came about. And yeah, this is the very first interview with Mrs. Mindy Bowles on the Canadian Council of Blind Health and Fitness podcast. I am your host, Ryan Van Parate, and if you have any questions, you know where to find me. So thanks, Mindy, and you're free to go.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. And there you have it. That's our very first interview with my very first sighted guide, who also happens to be my lovely wife. So let me know what you think in the comments. I want to hear from you and hear if you have a really awesome sighted guide that you maybe would like profiled. And yeah, look forward to more of these. I think it's awesome to get the perspective of the individuals that we rely on for help, right? How they perceive us as visually impaired people, how they perceive the team aspect. And yeah, you're going to get a lot of different perspectives for sure. So that is the episode 14. You know where to find me, ccb.healthandfitness@gmail.com. Until next time.